up this terrible thing, but she'd perpetuated the lie long after he'd recovered. She'd sat by his hospital bed until he'd gradually gotten the strength to leave it, pushed him around the gardens, then spent days encouraging him during physio. There had been plenty of time to bring up the subject, and all the time he was struggling to cope with everything that had been thrown at him, not only his injuries but the sharp pain of a breakup as well. He'd gotten through, of course, but once or twice he'd gone to bed feeling so incredibly miserable it had been an effort not to break down. How could she have done this to him? Why? He knew she didn't like Cherry, but this was sickening. He tried to breathe away the pain that had lodged itself in his chest. Part of him wanted an explanation, but he didn't trust himself to speak to his mother yet. He didn't want to hear what she had to say. Her floundering or her thin justification would just repulse him. For the same reason, he didn't call his dad either. He didn't want to incriminate his mother, for he knew that with their relationship being as it was, his father would think her despicable. He couldn't deal with any of that yet. It didn't take long to pack his few possessions. He looked round his room and knew this would be the last time he'd leave. Then he went downstairs. When he'd read the note from his mother that morning, it hadn't made any great impact. He was around and happy to see how he could help. Now, however, he could see the restrained urgency between the lines. She wanted to get to him before Cherry, and no wonder. If Cherry hadn't had the random, compassionate thought to bring over the photos, his mother probably would have reached him first. He wondered if he would have reacted differently if it had been she who'd told him. He tried to imagine the words coming out of her mouth. "I pretended you were dead. I made up a funeral." They sounded farcical, yet at the same time breathtakingly callous. It reminded him of the sort of thing reported in sensationalist newspapers, mothers who pretended their children had cancer in order to elicit substantial donations. He turned the note over, wrote something on the back, then put it back on the worktop. He hitched his bag onto his shoulder and left the house, pulling the front door shut behind him. As he walked down the road, he thought there was one good thing to come out of this revelation. He'd seen Cherry again. 39. Wednesday, September 16. The receptionist at ITV Towers rang through for Allison while Laura filled in the visitor slip.
"Mrs. Cavendish?"
Laura looked up.
"I've got her PA on the phone. She says there's nothing in the diary."
"What?"
"Allison's out of the office." "When's she back?"
"Not until this afternoon." It was 10 in the morning.
"But I have a meeting."
The receptionist held up a finger and listened to something through her headpiece.
"Her PA's coming down."
Laura moved aside for the throng behind her and checked her diary. She had the right time, so Allison must have forgotten, and it was supposed to be urgent. She watched the screens broadcasting a mix of the news and the morning's property program and wondered, irritated, when she'd be able to fit Allison in. This afternoon was already full, and she wanted to get back home early to talk to Daniel. Rachel, the PA, came through the revolving doors.
"Laura, there seems to be some mistake. We don't have an appointment for you this morning."
"But you rang Willow yesterday afternoon."
She frowned.
"No, I didn't."
"She spoke to you, something about casting?"
"I promise you, I didn't."
Something clicked in Laura's brain, and with it, a growing sense of foreboding. She knew who was behind this.
"My apologies, I'll talk to Willow. She must have been mistaken," she said, and quickly left the building.
Once outside, she tried to still her racing heart. Someone had a camera set on a tripod outside, pointing at the main entrance, right where she stood. It unnerved her, as if Cherry could somehow be watching on a screen somewhere, the all-seeing eye.
How had she found out?
Laura quickly moved away from the lens of the camera. That question had gone round and round in her head last night, but she couldn't work it out. There was one thing she was sure of, though. Cherry was behind this stunt. But why would she do something so silly, so juvenile, as to send her on a wild goose chase, a meeting that didn't exist? It was harmless in itself, unless she'd been deliberately placed out of the way.
Jesus. Daniel.
Laura walked into her ominously quiet house and knew almost instantly that Cherry had been there before her. There was a lingering sense of dread as she made her way through the empty rooms. The note was left on the kitchen worktop and said simply, "Seen Cherry. Decided to move back to the flat after all. Think it just makes things easier all round. Time I stood on my own 2 feet and got a little independence anyway. Dan." The last sentence had been an add-on, she could tell. Something to soften the blow. She laid the note down and sat heavily. What had Cherry told him?
How had she painted it? Whatever way served her best, she knew. She pulled out her phone and was about to call Daniel, then had an image of Cherry there, listening at his ear. No, this was a conversation that had to be between just the two of them. She sent him a text instead.
Daniel, I know you're probably justifiably upset and furious at me, but please, will you let me explain? Can we meet later?
The response was swift. Tomorrow, 5 at the flat, but I only have an hour. It wasn't quite what she wanted to hear, and her heart sank. At least Howard was away on a work trip, so she wouldn't have to explain why their son had suddenly left home. Moses came in from the garden, delighted to see her at such an unusually early hour. He leapt up onto the worktop and rubbed his face against her knuckles, her hands propping her head up in despair. She scratched him behind the ears.
Oh, Moses, I've done something really awful.
She had. She'd started this by telling that monstrous lie.
40. Wednesday, September 16. Cherry sat on the seat on the platform at Notting Hill Tube Station and waited for her watch to reach 4:07. Then she stood. It was time to start heading up to the street. Daniel, she knew, was prompt, so it was just late enough to make him hope she was still coming. She bounded up the steps so as to get just a little out of breath, and then ran out of the entrance. There he was, standing outside an upmarket sandwich establishment, trying not to look as if he might have been stood up.
"Sorry I'm a bit late," she said. "Tube was held up at South Ken."
And he smiled, all doubts melting away.
"No problem."
They stood self-consciously, both smiling awkwardly at each other, feeling like they were on a first date. Strangely, it seemed a bit premature for kisses, even though just over a year ago they were sleeping together. This afternoon was a movie date, a mutual appreciation for Steven Soderbergh. Once they'd both admitted they were single, the next most natural thing was to arrange to go out. Cherry had had to think of something low-key to ease them in, something that wouldn't feel too strange, something innocuous that wouldn't make him question whether he was doing the right thing. The film was about to leave theatres, and she'd said how it would be a shame to miss it. He agreed, and she said she was thinking of going that afternoon, so if he needed a break from his studies... He didn't think about it long, and they made a plan to meet later. Cherry went home to shower and change. She wanted to look her absolute best, as she had big intentions for the afternoon. They walked along the street toward the Gate Cinema. At the curb, he put his hand out protectively, as a car came flying around a left turn. Cherry felt a rush of warmth, a fuzzy sense of attachment. They crossed the road safely and headed toward the front of the building. Outside, the poster brought bad news. "It looks like it's already gone," cried Cherry, even though she'd known this when he suggested the venue. Sitting silently in a cinema would persuade him to come out, but it was not going to resurrect their relationship. He stepped closer.
"What? It can't have."
But it had. Something new about aliens had taken its place.
"What about the Electric Cinema just down the road?"
"Good idea," said Cherry.
They walked a couple of blocks to the Electric, but that was just as bereft of Steven Soderbergh's genius, something else that Cherry had already known. Daniel looked sheepish and thumped his fist on his forehead.
"I'm sorry. I've dragged you all the way up here for nothing."
"Outrageous! How are you going to make it up to me?"
He smiled.
"We could find another cinema."
"Or the zoo?"
She jumped in quickly.
"I've always wanted to go."
"Really?"
She noted his hesitation.
"You're not keen."
"If you'd like to."
But neither of them moved. Cherry could feel the afternoon slipping from her control. Whatever they did, she had to decide now.
"Tell you what, why don't we just walk toward the park? It's such a lovely day."
She turned, not giving him a chance to refuse, and they set off toward Kensington. It wasn't the most promising of starts, and in quiet desperation she knew she was going to have to work harder. She suddenly thought a walk wasn't such a good idea after all. They were awkward around each other, and needed something to distract them, something to talk about. She turned excitedly to him. "Jazz."
"What?"
"They do a bit of R&B, too, and great fish and chips."
"Shouldn't that be shrimp creole?"
"We could make a request."
She held her breath and sent a silent thank you to her memory. The aloof and elite Abigail and Emily to thank. She'd never penetrated their joint wall of friendship, but listening carefully to every conversation they'd had at the agency had been useful after all. More than once, they'd raved about a bar with the best live music, but never thought to ask her along.
She'd wistfully checked it online one night, when they'd gone along after work, and she was further put out by the fact it did look good, not too up itself or pretentious. She knew it opened at 4. In fact, they'd probably even get a table this early on. She looked at him excitedly.
Fancy it?
Her enthusiasm was infectious.
Where is it?
10 minutes.
Walk?
Cab?
He hailed one, and they climbed in. Cherry gave directions, and a few minutes later, they were driving down a little back alley. Nestled between a wine shop and a jeweller's was the bar. Once they were inside, Cherry knew immediately it had been a good idea. They had a table to themselves, and there were just enough people already there to make it feel like a gathering of friends, people who, through luck or skill, had managed to skive off work early. Daniel was looking at the menu.
Is it too early for cocktails?
Cherry grinned and shook her head.
This place is great. How did you find it?
It's one of my favourites, said Cherry casually, as if she spent numerous nights hanging out there and was now sharing it with him.
They were drawn in by the singers, a young white guy with a prominent Adam's apple and a statuesque black woman in a purple sequin dress. She was in her late 50s, but her voice was strong and defiant. The young guy would occasionally flirt with her on stage, and she'd treat him with dignified disdain. This amused him, and between them they had an electrifying presence together. Cherry glanced at Daniel and looked for signs that his mother had been in touch since she'd seen him that morning. Laura would have found out about the non-existent ITV meeting hours ago, and no doubt she'd be extremely suspicious of who'd actually sent her there, and had probably worked it out. She'd likely panicked, wanting to talk to Daniel, but so far, he'd not mentioned anything. He was still behaving as if he hadn't spoken to his mother, which meant he didn't know about how she'd threatened Laura the day before. In fact, Cherry wasn't all that worried. If Laura did bring it up, she would just deny it. It was all rather melodramatic and far-fetched, and Laura was the one with the record of grotesque lies. In fact, instead of being a worry, Cherry felt sure she could make it look as if Laura was behaving worse than ever, and this would push Daniel to her even quicker. She'd wasted enough time, and was sick of being down and out. Thankfully, Daniel had paid the cab and put his card behind the bar for the drinks. The band changed songs, and the woman started up something feisty and proud, and her voice filled the belly. Murmurs of appreciation went round the room, and Daniel impulsively stood. He held out his hand and led Cherry to the other couples in the small dance area. She smiled. The ice was well and truly broken. There was no going back. As he held her hand and spun her around the floor, Daniel thought again how lucky he was that Cherry had decided to make an unplanned visit to his parents' house that morning, and how lucky his shifts had worked out so he'd been in at the time. He'd been given something back from all that had been taken away from him after the accident. He got a stab of hurt when he thought about his mum and how quickly he'd moved out, but he quickly quashed it. The flat had smelled musty. He immediately opened all his windows and ran all the taps, which gurgled with airlocks. His old electronic travel card was lying on the coffee table, put there after he'd returned from work the day he and Cherry took the trip to Wales. It had been lined up neatly with his work ID and all his old mail. He checked through the postmarks. They stopped sometime around early November, probably when his mother had managed to get hold of most people to tell them he was in a coma. He quickly looked through, but they were all junk mail, bills and so on. He chucked them all in the trash. Then he opened the fridge. It was empty. He had a sudden urge to fill it and make the place feel more like home, so he left his rucksack lying in the hall and headed out. When he came back, he turned up the music and made himself some lunch. The place felt better already, but what he couldn't get rid of was the ache in his chest. And for the first time he felt angry. He'd been cheated out of something he cared about, all those months when he could have been with Cherry, the girl he loved. Why? Why had his mother gone to such lengths? The vibrant music and powerful singing released something in him and made him feel free. The singer finished on a heartfelt note, and a small outbreak of applause rippled around the room. Daniel led Cherry back to their table.
Quite a mover.
She blushed. No.
Did we ever go dancing?
Her face clouded over. Don't think we had the time.
What else didn't we do?
Swim with dolphins.
Which couples swim with dolphins?
It's an option. Have our portrait painted? He smiled.
Buy matching T-shirts.
Throw a dinner party.
Have our song.
Argue. He considered.
No, we didn't, did we?
In fact, he realized, they'd never had more than a healthy debate. It was a nice thought.
I've moved back to the flat.
She stared at him. What do you mean?
It was left empty, ever since the accident.
What did Laura say?
I haven't spoken to her yet. I left her a note back at the house. It just seemed like it was never going to be an easy conversation, and I needed some time to think.
Jerry nodded. Was that today? After we met up?
Yes.
She could tell he was still hurting. She put a hand on his, then raised her glass. Happy new home, she said warmly, and clinked. By the end of the night, he knew what he wanted to do. They left the bar, and before it became too big a thing, he asked her,
Do you want to come back?
She stared at him a moment, and he wondered if he'd gone too far.
It's okay if you don't.
No, I'd like to. They were silent in the cab on the way back, each content with the other's company and his or her own thoughts. Daniel opened his front door and she stepped inside. As it closed behind them, they moved together into a kiss. Jerry pulled urgently at his shirt, and they were naked before they reached the bedroom. Afterward, as they lay in bed, both were happier than they'd been for a long time. The missing months had melted away, and they felt as attached to each other as they had a year ago, only more so because of what they'd been through. Jerry's leg was looped over his, and Daniel looked at her beautiful, lightly tanned skin, luminous in the semi-dark.
Jerry.
She snuggled into his side. Yes?
Move in.
Her heart beat rapidly against his arm. She propped herself up on her elbow and looked at him, wide-eyed. Here?
Of course here. I don't want to waste any more time. My accident taught me that. And I don't know about you, but this...
He indicated the two of them.
Feels as good as it was. Better even. I just want to be with you.
I want to be with you too.
So will you?
She paused. What about your mum?
She's not coming.
No, I mean...
I know what you mean. She'll just have to get used to it. It's my life and I want you in it. If you'd like to be.
She kissed him. I would. 41. Thursday, September 17. Laura buzzed Daniel's flat from the street. She pulled her handbag in tightly over her shoulder, then, realizing her palms were damp, she quickly dabbed them on her jacket. It was a new sensation, being nervous about visiting your own son. She gave a small wave through the glass door to Ian, whom she could see was at his desk, then finally an answer. She smiled up at the camera and heard the door click open. On the first floor, he'd left his front door open. She knocked and peered inside for him.
Hello? It's me.
It felt odd not to be greeted, as though she was trespassing. He came through from the kitchen and stopped still in the hall. Laura was instinctively about to go and embrace him, but his folded arms and flat expression kept her at bay.
Tea?
Yes, please.
He turned and went back into the kitchen, and she was left alone for a moment.
Mint?
He called, and she followed and took a seat at the breakfast bar and watched as he made the tea. Neither of them said anything. He pushed a mug to water, and then, holding his, leaned his back against the counter and looked at her expectantly.
I'm sorry, said Laura. Truly, deeply sorry. They just told me you were likely to...
She paused, remembering the awful meeting.
Not make it. In fact, you didn't have a lot of time. I was devastated, and knowing I was about to lose you, I wanted you to myself, to give you all of myself. I just wanted the last few hours to be like they were when you were little. Just us.
And then?
What do you mean?
Well, I woke up. At no point did you tell Cherry I'd recovered, and you told me she'd left me months before.
I know, I...
Did you not think I missed her? That I could have done with her when I was recovering?
His voice ached with hurt, and she felt an urge to put her arms around him. But he wasn't a child she could comfort anymore. And anyway, she was the source of the hurt.
Daniel, it wasn't an easy decision. I agonized over it, even after you'd come round.
That makes it even worse. You held my future in your hands, tossing it this way and that.
No, you misunderstand.
At least, if you'd known for a fact she was bad news, it would make it easier to stomach.
Laura took a deep breath.
Look, I know it's been hard, and I should have been the one to tell you, but, well, this isn't going to be easy to hear.
He stiffened.
What?
Cherry manipulated me out of the way yesterday. She faked a call to my PA, pretending to be ITV, and told me I had to be at a meeting yesterday morning. Meanwhile, she went to the house to drop the bombshell.
Daniel put his cup down in exasperation.
Mum, she didn't know I was alive.
No, you see, she did. She'd come to my office the day before.
Yes, she told me.
Laura was surprised. She did?
Said she'd gone for some closure. You hadn't told her anything about my funeral or where she could visit my non-existent grave.
She tried to ignore his sarcasm. Is that all she said?
What else was there?
She threatened me. Told me she knew you were alive, and in revenge for what I'd done, she was going to take everything from me. He made a small exhaling noise, incredulous.
What?
I'm sorry, Daniel, she said. I know you like her, but she is bad news.
Revenge. Take everything. How's she going to do that?
I don't know. He was staring at her in a way that made her feel uncomfortable. Hurt was etched across his face, along with something else he was trying to fight. Dislike.
She came to the house yesterday morning to bring you some memorabilia, he said. Photos of our trip to Wales. She thought you might like them.
Her heart missed a beat. She's clever, don't you see? She's playing you. The buzzer went. Daniel picked up the phone, listened, and held down the door release. Expecting someone? She said apprehensively. She thought she knew who. His look confirmed it, and Laura sat up straight. What are you going to say to her? She asked. There was a rap at the door and Daniel left. Laura could hear quiet murmurings in the hallway. A few seconds later, he came back, followed by Cherry. Laura, she said demurely, I hope I'm not intruding. Laura looked at her. She was as cool as you like, and not a trace of their previous conversation could be read in her face. He knows everything. Cherry looked puzzled. About what you said to me? The lie? No, she began heatedly, before pulling herself together. About you, coming to my office and threatening me. Cherry looked at Daniel wide-eyed. I don't know what she means. Oh, come on! I'm sorry, Daniel, said Cherry softly. I know she doesn't like me, doesn't want us seeing each other, but I'm finding this very hard to deal with. Maybe we should rethink our plans. What plans? Said Laura, anxiously looking at Daniel. He was silent for a moment.
Cherry's moving in. Moved in.
She's what? I'm not. I can't cope with this. Upset, Cherry turned to go. Look, I'll just get a cab, take my things home again. Daniel grabbed her arm.
No.
She's moving in now. You don't waste any time, do you?
Mum.
Whose idea was it? Laura demanded.
What?
For her to move in. Daniel was losing patience.
Mine, of course.
Are you sure? Think back. Are you sure she didn't plant the idea?
No.
Cherry was in the hallway, dragging her bag to the door.
Cherry, wait.
Daniel ran over and put his hand on the door to stop her from opening it. Laura took a deep breath. She spoke awkwardly under her breath. Daniel, this is what I've been saying about the money. There was a ticket too, remember? Telling you the flight to France was 600 when it was only 5. I saw the ticket. She saw him hesitate. Daniel, please believe me. Everything I'm telling you is true. He looked at Cherry, who she saw was doing her best to look perplexed. Are you talking about when I came to your villa? She said. I don't understand. She blinked hurt, then started rummaging in her suitcase. You think I'd tried to scam money out of you? I didn't look. I'm sure I have it here somewhere. I kept it, a keepsake. It was our first trip together. Here! She produced a piece of crumpled paper with a flourish. My ticket! Daniel took it. That's all I ever asked you for, right? Continued Cherry. Laura frowned at the piece of paper in Daniel's hand. It looked the same, but the amount was 600. That's not right! That's not the ticket I saw! I need to go, Cherry said, tears welling in her eyes.
Not yet.
Daniel turned to Laura.
Mum, I think you'd better leave.
But can't you see? She must have made that up, printed another one or something. She's lying. He spoke quietly.
Mum, it's not Cherry who's the liar.
Laura broke her gaze from him when she could feel the tears prick. Holding her head as high as she could, she left the flat. As she made her way out onto the street, Laura could feel Cherry watching her from the window. She daren't look up. She didn't want to see her gloating, triumphant face. The dark was creeping in, casting the room in a reverential gloom, but Laura lay on the sofa, couldn't muster the energy to get up and switch on the light. In fact, she quite liked it, lying there,
Moses on her stomach, purring rhythmically, both of them watching the shadows take hold. It suited her mood. She knew she'd lost her cool earlier, but Cherry's performance had gotten to her. Now, lying here and looking back on it, she felt frightened at how much Cherry had controlled the entire incident. She was probably enjoying it, reveling in the way Daniel was turning against his own mother. She tried calling him when she got back to the house, but it had gone to his voicemail. She'd left a message, asking him to call her back, but he hadn't so far. She didn't expect a response tonight. In fact, she honestly didn't know when she'd hear from him again. The lift door opened in the hallway, and Moses pricked his ears. Howard must have come up from the garage. He came into the room and flicked on the light. Laura winced and covered her eyes. He was surprised to see her.
"What are you doing here in the dark?"
"Nothing. Relaxing."
Howard stroked Moses, who was weaving in and out of his ankles.
"Hello, boy."
He looked up.
"Where's Daniel?"
A knot formed in Laura's chest. She'd have to tell him.
"He's moved back to his flat."
Howard stood.
"When?"
"Yesterday."
"Was he not going to say goodbye?"
"It's not as simple as that."
He looked at her, waiting for more. Under pressure, she got up and moved into the kitchen, poured herself a glass of wine from the fridge. Howard followed.
"What's going on?"
"Daniel and Cherry are back together."
He looked surprised.
"What? After the way she dumped him?"
"She didn't dump him. I told her."
There was a long pause.
"Yes?"
"When we thought he wasn't going to make it. I told her he'd already died."
Howard stared, and then started to laugh, a wild, incredulous bark. The laugh dried up.
"You're not joking, are you?"
"She didn't love him. I'm pretty sure. I know she wants him for his money."
He rubbed his hand across his hair, making it stick up.
"Oh, my God."
Laura topped up her wine.
"Do you want some?"
she said, indicating the bottle. Still reeling, he shook his head.
"What about when he woke up? Did you not think to tell him the truth?"
"Oh, Howard, how could I?"
she said, frustrated at his lack of understanding.
"And now he's found out, through Cherry, who's manipulated herself back into his life."
"Cherry's manipulated?"
"She's a very clever, very determined young woman."
Howard reached for the bottle and a glass.
"Maybe I will have that drink."
He looked at her, and she wished he'd wiped the judgmental expression off his face.
"So, when he found out, he felt the need to move back to his flat, and judging from your mood when I came in, he's not best pleased with you,"
Howard observed.
"He doesn't see her for who she really is."
"I think it's you who's not seeing."
"But she's..."
"Not her, you. Look at yourself, at what you've done."
He shook his head.
"How on earth did you think you'd get away with this?"
"You're forgetting. At the time, we didn't think. The doctors told us he was dying. I just needed those last couple of days. As a mother, under the circumstances, I don't think that's too hard to justify, is it?"
"As a mother? He's a grown man, Laura. You don't have to think what's best for him anymore. How do you think he felt when he woke up and you... Christ, me too. Told him she'd left him. Me consoling him with a load of bullshit about how she wasn't worth it if she wasn't going to stick around."
He was angry now, and slammed his glass down.
"Does he think I was in on this?"
"I don't know."
"Well, you'd better bloody tell him I wasn't." "No, don't. I'll tell him."
He sighed heavily.
"Cherry's okay. What exactly have you got against her?"
Laura flashed a look of exasperation.
"I've told you. She's after his money, his future, thinking she can just hang on to his coattails and get herself another life."
"And you know this how?"
"Little things. She's lied about stuff, money, fabricated excuses to get time off to France. But it's more than that. It's, I don't know, a feeling."
"What? Mother's instinct?"
"Don't dismiss it,"
she snapped, hurt.
"You're deluded. Just let go. Let go of him."
He looked at her with a new distance, as if he didn't know her.
"Stop making excuses for your obsessive behavior. You've driven him away, you, and you've only got yourself to blame."
He shook his head as he looked at her, as if hit by a great sadness, then left the room. She heard him go upstairs, and after a while the footsteps faded out. She sat down and, pouring some more wine, found her hand was shaking. She hadn't said anything about Cherry's threats, but she had a feeling Howard would have just thought she was being sensational. Or what was it he'd called her? Deluded. 42. Friday, October 2. 2 weeks later, she still hadn't heard from Daniel. Outwardly, she put on a show of being level-headed and rational, acting as if it would all blow over. Inside, she was a writhing mess of anxiety. There was no one she could talk to about it. She and Howard were more estranged than ever, and didn't even seem to achieve their occasional meals together now. He'd send her a text telling her he had a late meeting at work, and she'd end up having a solitary dinner in the kitchen. Eating alone soon lost any appeal, and she'd gotten into the habit of not cooking, sometimes not really bothering to eat at all. She had lost a few pounds. As she inspected her face in the mirror above her dressing table, she noticed her cheeks were a little more hollow. But it wasn't really the sunken look that was different. It was the dullness of her eyes. She quickly glanced away. Tonight might take her mind off things. She was going to a dinner party at Isabella's. A handful of friends had been invited, Isabella said, then had followed by asking if Howard would be working, rather than asking if he was free to come. Laura hadn't pressed for an invitation for him. He wouldn't go anyway, not with the way things were between them. She wasn't really in the mood for lots of jolly conversation, but it was better than staying at home. She hoped Isabella was going to be too busy to ask much about Daniel. She hadn't told her friend he'd moved out, and she didn't want to get in an awkward corner, making up something to avoid explaining about the lie. No, the plan was to get out of the house, have a change of scene, mingle with some old friends, and then come home early. She was also going to avoid drinking too much, didn't want to start feeling desperate or maudlin, and end up blurting something. She preferred not to even think about it. It was like a shameful secret, a big, dirty black goblin that sat on her shoulder, poking her in the back of the neck every now and then, just to remind her it was there. She slid the lipstick expertly over the edge of her Cupid's bow, just as she heard the elevator door open. Howard was home. It instantly made her nervous. She snapped the lipstick shut and put it down. Then she left her bedroom. It was good he was home early, she told herself, as there was something she wanted to ask him, had been wanting to ask him for a while now. She headed into the living room, where Howard, still in his work suit, was pouring himself a whiskey.
"Good day,"
she asked with forced brightness. He turned, saw with some surprise that she was dressed up, but didn't comment.
"Fine. Yourself?"
Laura wasn't going to tell him she'd tried calling Daniel for the third time since he'd thrown her out, and had, for the third time, gotten his voicemail. She'd not left a message, didn't see how she could really expand on the previous two. But the lack of communication was killing her, and somehow she had to get on to the subject.
"Yes, great, thanks. You up to much tonight?"
"No, not really. Been a long week."
"Meant to be a nice weekend. You catching up with anyone? Seeing Daniel?"
It was about as subtle as a brick, but she kept her fixed smile in place.
"Not got any plans to,"
he said slowly. She braced herself, and any pretense left her. The question had been burning away for days, and she had to know.
"Has he been in touch? You know, since he moved out?"
Howard took a sip of his drink.
"Yes."
It cut her down, even though it was the answer she'd secretly expected.
"Is he okay?"
"I take it you've not spoken to him."
She didn't feel the need to reply. He was awkward.
"He's fine. Busy at work. Doesn't have a lot of spare time. You know how it is, these trainee doctors."
Knowing he'd lied to spare her pain made it all the worse. If Daniel had time to speak to his dad, then he had time to speak to her.
"Is Cherry still living there?"
Her voice sounded tight, strangled. He looked at her.
"You want me to answer that?"
Laura took a deep breath and glanced around the room without really looking at it.
"Leave it, Laura."
Hurt, she looked at him. She didn't want to get into another argument.
"Right, well, I'd better be off."
"Going somewhere nice?"
"Just to Isabella's."
"Well, enjoy."
She was about to say, why didn't he come too, seeing as he was back earlier than expected, but he'd already turned away, was fixing himself another drink. She nodded at his back and went into the hall, put her shoes on, and left. She was the last to arrive. Isabella had hired caterers whose staff was also acting as a sort of butler, and a young woman with sleek dark hair who reminded her of Cherry took her coat. She was led into the front room, abuzz with chatter and good humour, and she recognised most of the people there. Diane and her husband Philip, who'd come to the barbecue last year, as had Sally and Edward. A couple of others she'd seen at Christmas, but no one since, as socialising had taken such a knock over the last few months. No one noticed her. She stood just inside the doorway on the periphery, unable to join the flow of the party. Laura felt as if she didn't belong, as if, should she go over and try to join the conversation, they'd turn with cool glances. She'd lied that her son was dead. Laura was under no illusion what these people would think if they knew. They'd reel in shock and a collective muted horror. Even if they knew the truth about Cherry, it wouldn't be enough to justify what she'd done. She'd said the unsayable, and allowed it to permeate deep into other people's lives. They'd put themselves above such sordidness. They'd judge, gossip, some maybe even getting a kick out of the eyebrow raising, the subtle amusement at her expense. She was starting to regret coming, and wondered about just backing out and going home, when Isabella spotted her. She waved delightedly and headed over.
"Darling, you're almost late. I hope it's not because you've been working yourself too hard."
She didn't wait for an answer, but kissed her on the cheek and signalled for the waitress to bring over some champagne, holding her own glass out at the same time for a refill.
"Come and meet my new friend Andrew. You look great, by the way. What a beautiful dress. Silver grey does wonders for your eyes."
Laura was pulled in the direction of Isabella's husband, Richard, who was talking to an energetic, wiry man with grey hair and a tanned, weathered face.
"Andrew, allow me to introduce you to my great friend Laura."
"Hello, Laura."
He held out his hand warmly, and she took it as Isabella looked on.
"Laura is a television producer, and Andrew runs an exporting business. Oh, we're ready,"
she said as a gong went off in the dining room, and Laura found she'd been seated next to Andrew. As she looked around the table, she realized they were the only two people in the room who had arrived alone. A flash of suspicion crossed her mind, and then it became clear during the first course.
"So what do you do for fun?" asked Andrew.
Laura smiled. "It's questions like these that always remind me I need to take more time off."
"I know what you mean. Running a business, it's a monster that chews up all your waking hours."
"So, not much time for anything else?"
"I do try and keep fit."
"What's your thing?"
"Triathlons, mainly. Set myself a target twice a year."
Laura kept smiling, but inside she was deeply uncomfortable. She'd expressly told Isabella not to set her up. It felt like another weight on her shoulders. An evening she had to spend being polite to a man that she had no interest in, at least not romantically. What had he been told? Christ, it was so embarrassing. She was suddenly angry, which made her feel exhausted, which in turn angered her more. She got through the meal as best she could. More than once she wondered what Daniel was doing. When was she ever going to hear from him? The questions whirled around her head, tormenting her while she fended off polite questions about the difference between a director and a producer. She announced her departure as soon as was reasonable. Andrew said a perfunctory goodbye, and she felt a flash of guilt. He knew she hadn't been keen on her dinner companion.
"Damn Isabella for being so interfering."
She came over then, said she'd escort Laura to the door.
"I wish you weren't leaving so soon."
Isabella peered at her, noticed her tense mood.
"You are okay, aren't you? Not coming down with anything?" "No, Isabella, I'm not." "What's wrong, then? You either think I'm some sort of floozy, or consider my marriage dead, neither of which is a particularly great sentiment from a so-called friend."
It was harsh, too harsh, but it was said. Laura immediately felt guilty when she saw Isabella's look of surprised hurt, but somehow she didn't know how to, or didn't want to, make amends. Laura left and got into the waiting cab that had been called for her. Her mood didn't improve on the way home. When she got in, she found Howard not there. She went up to the second floor. Seeing no light under his door, she tentatively knocked, then quietly opened it. His room and his bed were empty. He wasn't in the den either. And with a sinking feeling, she realized he must have gone to Marianne's. She felt a flash of anger. She should have chatted up Andrew after all. Not that he'd be interested now. Why was she able to burn bridges so easily these days? Alone, she went into the kitchen and fixed herself a glass of wine. This wasn't how she'd foreseen her life. Her marriage a sham, despite her heated protestations to Isabella, and her only child estranged from her. She was suddenly hit with such a severe slice of loneliness, she was winded. What would happen if she lost them? Both of them? The sadness that captured her stripped her raw, and she got up from the kitchen table. Leaving her wine behind, she hurried up the stairs, tripping on a step halfway, then ran into her room. She sat at the desk. She had to do something. She couldn't just let Daniel go on, not knowing how she felt, letting that girl twist everything. A photo was hung above the desk, a black and white shot of her and Daniel when he was a baby. She looked up at it now and saw his delighted, adoring gaze as she held him above her head. Something caught in her throat. She'd poured so much into him, so much of herself. He was her joy, a person she had in part created in every sense of the word, her investment, her baby. She taught him how to write his name, to catch a ball, to ride a bike, encouraged him to debate, to have an opinion, to stretch his mind. Shown him how to cook and how to treat women. If he wouldn't let her in the flat and wouldn't answer her calls, she'd have to try something else. An email was risky. Cherry used Daniel's computer, this much she knew. And she couldn't post a letter. There was a good chance it would be intercepted. The only option was to give it to Ian, the porter, with strict instructions it was only to be handed to Daniel. She picked up her pen and started to write. 43. Friday, October 2. It was his first day off from the hospital or study in what seemed like weeks. Daniel felt an urge to escape, and they got up early and went to Cambridge. Cherry had never been and said she wanted to see where he'd lived and studied all those years. They strolled along King's Parade and Trinity Street, the formal university buildings watching over them like a collection of stern but fond headmasters. He pointed out which window had been his bedroom and where he'd gone for bacon sandwiches on a Sunday morning after a heavy night out. She listened to him exclaim and laugh as the memories came back, but it wasn't wistful nostalgia, which she was pleased about. She didn't like not knowing about a great chunk of his life, and didn't want him to yearn for it and the girls that might have been a part of it. After she'd seen the sights of his university days, they decided to join the tourists. It seemed a shame not to take a boat on the river, and Daniel watched as Cherry lay back, her eyes closed against the unexpected warm sun, summer's last gasp before autumn fully took hold. As usual, his stomach flipped over when he looked at her. She was so incredibly beautiful. Her long, dark lashes underscored her eyes like naughty smiles, and the hollow of her collarbone was bathed in sunshine in such an inviting way that he wanted to dip his fingers in its warmth. It wasn't just that he was deeply attracted to her. Daniel could spend hours with her without getting bored. She was clever, and sometimes he wondered why she'd settled for a job that had seemed to him to be beneath her ability. But he'd respected her choice, and anyway, she wasn't doing it anymore. The recent uneasy thought popped into his head again. Cherry didn't seem to be doing, or looking to be doing, anything. His face clouded over. He wouldn't have thought like that if his mother hadn't been so adamant about Cherry's motivation for being with him. She was wrong. Cherry was genuine, but still, Daniel couldn't shake a nagging sensation. Why was his mum so convinced? He hadn't returned her messages yet, as he didn't know what to say to her. He was tired of trying to remain tactful under countless accusations of what his girlfriend was really like. He was tired of having to defend her. If he was honest, he was sick and tired of the entire subject and just wanted to get on with his life. He couldn't ignore Laura forever, but he knew that as soon as he called, she'd bring it up again. And then there was that nagging thought, the thing he couldn't quite tune out. He was becoming increasingly aware that since Cherry had moved in, she hadn't said anything about getting a job. "What are you thinking about?" Cherry had one eye open and was watching him. He smiled.
"Nothing. Just hoping it doesn't rain."
Cherry gazed skyward, wisps of white gauze over cornflower blue.
"Don't think so."
She reached up and let her hand brush against the draping tendrils of a weeping willow as they glided downstream.
"Nice to get out of London."
"Are you back in the hospital tomorrow?"
"Yes."
He batted away a couple of midges, coming in too close to his face.
"You?"
"Saturday. Thought I'd have a lazy one. Watch a movie."
"And after that? I mean, the rest of the week?"
He tried to sound casual, but he saw her stiffen.
"What do you mean?"
He pushed against the riverbed with his pole.
"I just think it must be boring for you, being in the flat all day."
"I'm not in it all day. I go out."
"Yes, but you were... always so ambitious. When you were at the agency..."
He smiled at her. She was silent for a moment.
"Do you think I'm sponging?"
"No.
It's just I can't really pay you any rent at the moment. You know that."
"I don't want you to."
"Bills are hard, too."
"I know. It's okay."
"But I do help out with groceries."
She looked at him, her eyes defensive, hurt. Daniel was squirming. He didn't really want this dissection of their domestic life, and was beginning to regret bringing up the subject.
"I'll change that, starting next month."
She sounded determined, but the look on her face was one of resignation, He had no idea what she was talking about. "I've been offered a job," she explained. He stopped punting and looked at her in delight.
"Wow, you have? What is it? Why didn't you stay?"
"Because it's not great. Only assistant, not full agent. And the money's not much. I was going to keep looking, but..."
"Don't take it."
She looked at him in quiet exasperation. "I think in light of what we've just discussed, I should..."
"No, please. There's no rush. It was just that I was thinking, you're smart. You obviously want to do something with your life, and it must be so frustrating hanging around, when you're not out, that is."
He was aware he was now ignoring the notion that she was taking advantage of living in his flat. Cherry sat up and took his hands. "I really think I should, at least as a stopgap. I've got another idea. I wasn't going to tell you yet, not until I have it all worked out. But I've been thinking of setting up a company. But until then, if I take this job, I could afford to pay you $1,000 a month. I know it's not much." He put a finger to her lips, embarrassed for putting her on the spot. Ashamed, too, because, strictly speaking, he didn't pay for his apartment either. It had been bought by his father. And here she was, offering up what would be half, probably more than half, of her salary from a job she was too bright for and didn't want.
"I don't want to hear another word about it. More to the point, what's the company?"
She paused. "You sure?"
"Yes. Now come on, spill."
"Well, it's still early days, but with my knowledge of property, I think there's still some money to be made in renovation."
"I'll invest in you."
"Really?"
"Of course."
She smiled politely. Daniel started punting again. A silence fell between them. He felt he should make amends.
"What are you thinking?"
"What if it, you know, the whole money thing comes between us?"
"Why should it? Okay, I know it just did, a bit, but now we know we can deal with it."
He looked at her and guessed what she was thinking. "It's not just us, though, is it? Your mum thinks that's why I'm with you."
"That's got nothing to do with us."
"It has, though. I'm never going to be as rich as you, you know that. We'll always be different. You'll always end up paying more than me as long as we live your lifestyle. Sometimes it's a struggle to keep up, to not mind. I do have pride, you know." Upset, Cherry looked toward the bank. Daniel stopped punting and sat down in the boat.
"It's okay."
"I wish I could buy this, buy that, but I can't. That's just the way it is. If it bothers you, you must say so."
"I'm sorry, Cherry."
She turned to him and gave a small smile, allowed him to take her hands. "Of course, we could always move to Croydon." He laughed.
"Wouldn't bother me."
She grimaced.
"Would me?"
And he laughed again. "I'm afraid of what she'll do," she said quietly. "Afraid I'll lose you." She sounded so fragile, on the verge of defeat, and he felt a sudden fierce urge to fight for her, and a fear. He realized he'd let something toxic in, into what was theirs, their space, their love, and he was angry at himself for allowing his mother's words to influence him so much. He'd never been so happy, and if he wasn't careful, he'd drive Cherry away. And then he knew he couldn't go on for months with his mum's constant disapproval, her dissuasive arguments. It was like pulling a tooth. The more you thought about it, the worse it seemed. Better for his mother for it to be over. One short, sharp tug.
"Marry me."
A look of shock made him laugh. Then he realized in a flash of panic she might say no. He went onto one knee, the boat rocking precariously, and took her hand as she giggled and yelped. "You'll tip us in!"
"Will you?"
She laughed again, and a joy radiated over her face.
"Yes!"
44. Backward and forward she slowly tilted her hand, entranced by the leaping colours that flashed at her before vanishing and being replaced by other, seemingly brighter colours. It utterly captivated her, and she knew she'd never get bored of it. They'd gone shopping immediately, Daniel saying he wanted to make it official, propose to her properly, and he apologised for not being better prepared. At first, Cherry had been so stunned, she didn't quite believe it. She allowed herself to be pulled along to a small, exclusive jeweller's, just 5 minutes from the boathouse, where she was presented as my fiancé. The assistants had cooed over how romantic the proposal was, and she and he were asked if they had a preference for a particular type of stone. This made Cherry sit up and take notice. She had to exert some influence here if she was going to get what she wanted. In fact, Cherry knew just what she wanted. A diamond, of course, a distinctive one. But there was an opportunity here to fantasize with a rainbow of jewels, some of which would appear later in her life in a different form. A gift for her birthday, their first child, perhaps, an eternity ring. She tried on a sapphire first, surrounded by smaller diamonds, then an aquamarine, which was the colour of the Caribbean Sea, then a blood-red ruby, before she sensed a note of restlessness in Daniel, and the assistant was clearly beginning to lose interest too. So she chose the one she'd spotted a full 10 minutes before. It was a 2-carat, square-cut diamond in a platinum band. She left the shop wearing it. As she walked along, her right hand in Daniel's, with the other she rubbed her thumb against the underside of the ring, smiling and feeling its cold hardness in some sort of private acknowledgement that they were going to be friends for life. After Daniel had left for work the next day, Cherry had tried her ring in each room, seeing how it looked in certain lights and against particular fabrics, and then with numerous outfits too. She experimented in how it looked when she poured some water from the kettle, when she was on the phone, hand held aloft, when she typed on a keyboard. She became more delighted with every scenario. She draped the ivory curtains in the living room around her waist and twirled, her heart soaring with happiness. She'd done it. She was going to marry someone who would keep her from her old life forever. She would never have to worry about struggling, about money, or the pure drudgery of a dead-end monotonous job like her mum had had to endure. She was better than that, and she could hold her head high. Stuff Nicholas and his bigoted views. Maybe they'd buy a house on the Webb estate. Imagine if it was next door. If Nicholas and his stupid wife just came out one day and there she was. She delighted herself for a good while with this notion and the imagined looks on their faces. Then she began to grow restless and looked out the window. She wanted to go out and tell someone her good news, take her ring on a trip to someone. She found herself driving toward Croydon and thought she'd surprise her mum. She'd go and see her and wait to see how long it took her to notice. Wendy, so unused to impromptu visits, was convinced there was something wrong. In the end, Cherry had to show her the ring, just to shut her up, which spoiled her plan of waiting to see when she caught sight of the £10,000 of rock on her finger.
"Oh, my good God!" exclaimed Wendy, clutching her hand. "Is that real?"
"Of course it is."
"Are you—"
Wendy's face lit up, and Cherry grinned and swerved to avoid the ensuing kiss.
"Congratulations!"
Wendy clasped a hand over her mouth, and her eyes shone with threatened tears of happiness.
"To think my girl marrying, oh, Cherry, to Daniel. He's so lovely. Honest, I liked him so much. Oh, it's like a fairy tale, like that Catherine and William. I'll have to go somewhere proper for my dress, designers at Debenhams or something."
As Cherry drove back home, she passed various old haunts that used to bring shame or dread. The restaurant where she'd worked, the school, they were nothing to her anymore. She was a different person, a better person, and they would never be able to threaten her again. As she escaped their stranglehold, she felt a new freedom, and it was exhilarating. She got back just before 2, still in a state of bliss. As she walked past the porter, he called out to her.
"You on your own, love?"
"Yes, Daniel's at work." Ian stood up from the desk and disappeared into the room behind, calling back over his shoulder.
"That will explain this, then."
Cherry wondered idly what it was he'd gone to get, when her eye was suddenly drawn to an envelope tucked into a small cubbyhole, which she knew he reserved for registered mail that he signed for on the resident's behalf. It was a handwritten letter, and it was addressed to Daniel. She was about to ask if he wanted her to take it for him, when she recognised the handwriting. Laura's. Without thinking, she snatched it up and slipped it into her handbag, just as Ian came back through with a large bunch of flowers.
"Unless you have another admirer."
"They're beautiful." She read the card tucked into the foliage. "To my fiancé, on the first day of our engagement."
"Yep, ring's still blinding me,"
joked Ian, shielding his eyes from Cherry's finger. Back in the flat, Cherry sat down on the lemon sofa and took out the letter. She fingered it for a moment, thinking. It was probably a plea, full of pathetic begging. But then again, it might have more poison about herself, and she couldn't afford anything to upset this engagement. She'd already mentioned she wanted a winter wedding, and was planning something for January. The sooner the better, as far as she was concerned. There was still the hurdle of Laura, and despite all Daniel's protestations that he decided what went on with his life, Cherry was a little worried. Laura would have to keep her interfering nose out, and that included letters to Daniel blackening her name. She opened it and read quickly.
"Daniel, I'm sorry you don't feel you can return my calls, and I know that's in part because you don't want to hear what I keep saying, but I can't stand back and watch when there's something very wrong. I also know you love Cherry, and it's hard to hear negative things about the person you love, but all I ask is that you consider what I've said. Investigate it.
Believe me when I say I would not exaggerate just to destroy a relationship simply because I didn't approve. This is a situation much more serious than that. Maybe you could do some simple, unobtrusive inquiries. Remember the story about her grandmother who died, the one Cherry told her boss? That's exactly what they said, and yet she didn't mention anything to us at all. Why not? Was it not true? Or perhaps there's something else, something about her past that you could find out. Has she ever told you about any of her ex-boyfriends? Who they were? Why it ended? If you find that there's nothing in my fear, then you can tell me so and I'll back off. But please, just try. I don't care what she does to me, as long as you try. And in a way I wish she would do something just so you could see. It goes without saying that I miss you hugely, and I want more than anything for us to be on speaking terms again. With love, Mum.
Cherry placed the letter on her lap, and knew immediately that Daniel mustn't see it. It would have to get lost, mislaid by Ian. There was a chance he'd mention it to Daniel, might even say it was from Laura, but as Daniel was not talking to her, he'd probably not bother to find out what it had contained. She stood suddenly. Laura didn't yet know of the engagement, but Cherry knew Daniel would have to tell her. His mum needed to back right off, and do what any prospective mother-in-law did when her son got married, recognise her new diminished place in his life, and keep her mouth shut. Laura needed to know whom she was dealing with and what was best for her. Cherry screwed up the letter and stuffed it in her pocket. She waited until Monday, as there was a better chance that Howard would not be at the golf course. Daniel had mentioned which one he was a member of, and as she drove through the gates of the Royal Surrey Golf Club, she saw it was as exclusive as it had looked online. With the car wheels crunching on the gravel, she slowly passed the clubhouse, with its ivy-clad brick, and headed for the car park. Cherry stopped the car in a quiet corner, where no one else was around, but where she could still see the clubhouse. She got out and started to walk toward the entrance. Pushing open the large double doors, she stepped inside. It smelled of beeswax and money, and the carpet was thick and plush. As she walked along, she noticed wooden boards hung on the walls listing winners of tournaments. She stopped and read their gold lettering, rows of names going back to 1875. Then she saw his name, Mr. Howard Cavendish, 2015 winner of the Winter League. It was paired with a Mrs. Marianne Parker. They also won in 2014, 2012, and 2011. Wow, quite a couple. They disappeared for a while, but then she saw them listed again in 1995. It was a long gap, and Cherry wondered what had happened. Maybe they'd been off form. The most recent winners also had their photograph displayed, and Cherry's eyes were drawn to one of Howard with Marianne. She studied it, looking for something of interest. He had his arm around her rather broad shoulders, and both were smiling at the camera.
"Can I help you?"
A middle-aged man, dressed in a blazer and pale chinos, had stopped beside her. He was the kind of man who knew everything about his golf club, a man who would have very strong ideas about who should be a member and the etiquette involved. She was glad she'd worn one of the suits from her days at the agency, and she gave him a disarming smile. "Are you the club secretary?"
"Yes,"
he said expectantly, clearly waiting for her to tell him who she was. "I was just wondering if you could give me some membership information, a brochure or something." His suspicion receded slightly, and she was handed a glossy brochure, then had to listen to a sales spiel. After a few smiles and complimentary comments about the course, she managed to escape. She made her way back to the car and sat inside, wondering what to do. Howard spent a lot of time here, she knew, and she wanted to find out why. She opened the brochure and dialed the number printed on the inside cover, disguising her voice.
"Oh, hello. I meant to be meeting a friend of mine, Marianne Parker, today. Only I've forgotten what time we said, and I can't get hold of her. Could you possibly tell me our tea time?" 2 o'clock. Oh, my, I've missed it, haven't I? I'll have to catch up with her later. I'm so sorry to have bothered you."
She hung up before he asked her any more. So Marianne was here. It might be worth waiting a while. Chucking the brochure on the seat, Cherry settled back. After about an hour, she saw a woman, who looked like the woman in the photo, exit the clubhouse. Cherry narrowed her eyes, feeling certain from her build and brown hair that she was Marianne. She watched Marianne talk to a female friend she'd come out with. After a couple of minutes, they embraced and went to their separate cars. Marianne got into a BMW, a new convertible in silver. Cherry waited until she drove off, and then carefully, cautiously followed. Marianne headed back into town, along the A3, and Cherry made sure she stayed at least 2 cars behind all the way. They crossed the river at Battersea Bridge, and then headed north toward Kensington.
The roads got busier and the drivers more erratic the farther into town they went. Cherry almost lost her a couple of times. When they reached Swiss Cottage, Marianne turned off toward Hampstead into what were residential streets. Audis and Range Rovers jammed up against one another in quiet exclusivity. Then the BMW slowed and pulled into a space outside a three-story red-brick Victorian terrace home. Cherry stayed back and watched as Marianne locked the car and made her way up the path to the storm porch and into the house. Cherry waited a moment, wondering what to do next, but there was nothing more to see. She was just starting to pull away when another car came toward her from the opposite direction. Alarmed, she quickly reversed and parked back against the curb. The other driver slid into a space just a little farther up the street, undid the belt, and climbed out. Keeping her head down, Cherry watched as Howard went up the path to Marianne's house. Howard. She waited for him to ring the bell, but her eyes widened as she saw him take out his own key and let himself in. Cherry stared at the shut door in excitement and let out a little laugh. So that's what he was up to. And for some time, judging by the years of photos of them together. Cherry thought about the woman she'd just seen. She was a brunette to Laura's blonde complexion, and more sturdy, more ruddy-cheeked. Cherry wondered what it was like, knowing your husband's mistress was not as pretty as you. Must be even more of a punch in the gut. She slipped the car into gear and drove away. 45. Tuesday, October 13. It was time for an apology. Time to eat humble pie and admit she was wrong. She'd been too harsh, too quick to judge. This Laura admitted heavy-hearted about her abominable behaviour. She waited in some trepidation at the front door, and as she glanced around, she noticed how the nights were drawing in. It was very cloudy, and the still greyness seemed to blanket everything. A few seconds later, her buzz was answered.
"I'm sorry,"
she said anxiously, quickly, as she was feeling brittle and wasn't sure if she'd be able to hold it together if Isabella was still angry with her.
"I completely overreacted, and I shouldn't have spoken to you like that."
Isabella deliberated a moment. Then she opened the door wider and indicated for Laura to come in. The relief was so great she thought she might burst into tears, but that would be absurd, so she bit the inside of her cheeks to stop herself. She seemed on the verge of tears too often now.
"Drink?"
asked Isabella as she led her into the drawing-room, where Laura had come for the party just a few days before.
"Yes, please."
And she watched silently as Isabella mixed two gin and tonics.
"It was a lovely party,"
she started feebly. "I think we both know that's not true," said Izzy, handing her a glass. "At least not for you." Laura was chastened.
"Sorry, but I did expressly ask you not to set me up with him."
"I didn't set you up. He just happened to be at the same dinner party. He and Richard had been doing some work together, and Richard wanted to extend the alliance socially. He was there as Richard's guest."
"Oh, God, now I feel even worse."
"But I admit I did place you next to each other at dinner. Not to set you up," she said quickly. "But I just thought you might enjoy the company. No, not like that. I don't mean that you're lonely or anything. It's just everyone knows each other inside out. I thought it might be fun for you. Someone new."
Laura ruefully remembered her polite, aloof responses over dinner. "I don't think it was much fun for him."
She was half expecting an admonishment of some kind, but Isabella took a long swallow of her drink, then said,
"He'll get over it."
There it was again, the dam bursting and relief swamping her. And she started to well up.
"For God's sake, this is ridiculous."
She blinked quickly, knowing this overreaction to a kindness, a much-needed reconciliation, was all because of Daniel and, to some extent, Howard. She hadn't had a reply to her letter, and was beginning to wonder if she ever would. What if they didn't speak before Christmas, or Christmas passed them by altogether? What if it went on even longer? For a year, too? Perhaps they'd just bump into each other on the street one day, nod an acknowledgement to each other. Perhaps they'd just bump into each other on the street one day, nod an acknowledgement to each other. Perhaps so much time would pass, they'd get used to being without each other. But this thought was so unbearably sad, it almost made her stagger, collapse weakly onto the sofa.
"Laura, is everything okay?"
She'd barely heard the question, and adjusted her gaze so she was refocusing on her friend.
"You seem a bit..." "What?"
Her voice caught.
"Preoccupied. Has something happened?"
Laura tried to smile.
"Like what?"
"I don't know."
"Honestly, things couldn't be better."
Izzy didn't believe her. She could tell.
"You can talk to me, you know. I'm your friend. Forget this silly little spat."
Izzy squeezed her arm warmly, softened her voice.
"You and I, We've been through everything.
She almost confessed then. She longed to in her head. But how did she start? The lie had made her too ashamed. She couldn't bear for anyone else to know what she'd done, and she was afraid of what Izzy would think of her. She looked at Izzy's face, open and kind, and forced a smile.
Really? There's nothing.
Izzy studied her carefully, then acknowledged she was being pushed away. She looked hurt.
Fine,
she said quietly, and in that word, Laura felt a door close between them. It was awkward then, and she heard herself making excuses.
Suppose I should be getting back. Haven't fed Moses yet.
She knew Izzy was aware she was just making stuff up. It was feeble and depressing, and she suddenly had to get out of there. Usually, when they said goodbye, they had something in the future to look forward to. See you tomorrow. Meet you for lunch Tuesday. I'll give you a call about yoga. This time, there was nothing.
See you soon,
Laura eventually went for as she briefly kissed Isabella's cheek, and then walked down the path and looked for a cab. She hesitated before looking back, as she was unsure of what Izzy's expression would be. Then, when she did, meaning to smile and reassure them both, she just caught sight of the front door as it was closed shut. The house was cold when she got in, and dark. She switched on the heating and went to make herself some tea, but when she got the milk from the fridge, she saw a half bottle of wine and poured a glass of that instead. She knew drinking wasn't going to help with her melancholy mood, but what the hell? She debated over whether to make anything to eat, and then decided she would, for Howard too, as it was his first day back after a work conference. He hadn't texted her to say he'd be late. Having something to do made her feel a little better, and she switched the radio on and started a bolognese sauce. By the time she heard the elevator come up from the den, dinner was ready. She decided that instead of the dining room, they could eat in the kitchen tonight. It would make a change and would be good for them to sit somewhere different, somewhere old habits would not take hold. She was just setting the table as Howard walked in. He stopped when he saw what she was doing.
Hi, hungry?
She asked brightly, her hands full of spoons and forks. He looked across at the stove.
It's spaghetti bolognese.
Howard nodded and went to wash his hands at the sink.
Can I get you a drink?
Howard tensed.
Will you stop?
Stop what?
The stupid pretense.
Laura smiled,